Welcome to the Cult of Hockey podcast. I am David Staples, and I am here today with Bruce McCurdy.
Good morning, David.
Hey, Bruce.
Hope you're feeling a little better this week. Last week kind of came off the rails for you a bit, eh?
Oh, yeah. Bad cold. So I might be coughing now and
still
then here.
Hear it in
working
your voice.
On the cough drop.
Still hearing it in your voice there.
Better radio voice, maybe.
Bring you down
not.
To my level.
Probably not. So... I'm not doing too good, and neither are the Edmonton Oilers right now, Bruce.
Well, which Edmonton Oilers? Are we talking about the ones that went 0-1-1 in the last two games, or the one that went 3-1-1 in the last five games, or the ones that went 3-6-1 in the last 10 games, or which? You know, it's like...
They're what are they overall, like
12-9-2. So 12-11. Yep. Right on, basically, right on the 550 cut line, which is
so pretty good.
Bettman Point.
We're looking at a playoff team here right now.
Yeah, first in the Pacific, eh? Still first in the Pacific. It's all good.
I refuse to panic. You know, I record scoring chances. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're ahead of the eight ball on grade A chances.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting more grade A chances than the other team. They're getting more scoring chances than the other team. As long as I see that, I'm not worried.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they're a real 500 team,
right,
more wins than losses, I'm
right.
not worried. And to me, they've consistently shown some spine this year in games. They're hardly ever, you know, those off. It was about 1 in 4 games in recent years where you just get so sick of it. You can hardly stand to watch the game anymore. And we're not having those games. They're just not. I'm not seeing that.
Or you can't stand to watch it for different reasons because the other team is so terrified about Edmonton's ability to open it up that they spend the whole game just trying to clog up the ice surface and make their NHL expensive product as boring as humanly possible. I'm looking at you, Dave Tippett, and your garbage play. It works. So I guess you can't argue with it, but man, is it tough to watch.
You know, I thought those games were kind of, I thought the game in Phoenix was entertaining. There was lots of scoring chances in that game for both teams, and it was back and forth. I mean, I get it. I like watching Oliver Ekman-Larsson play hockey.
He is a
hell of a hockey
He's
player.
He's a wonderful player.
Bruce, he was the best player on the ice in those two games.
You could certainly make that case yesterday for sure.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, Friday the ice in Arizona was terrible. So, you know, there was a lot of mistakes which led to scoring chances. But in terms of wide open end-to-end, I don't think that's Mr. Tippett's style. It never has been.
So
he's death on the Oilers. I mean, I'm bitter. But I'm bitter because it does make the game very difficult to watch. Like the first and second period yesterday. My goodness. I mean, if you'd paid $200 for a ticket to watch that game, would you have been happy with what you saw?
It was painful. I mean, but it was painful because the Oilers, like they... The puck goes in off Russell. I mean, like some Phoenix fan some years ago sold his soul to the devil.
Yeah,
to get so they could get every single bounce against one NHL team. And for some reason, they picked the Oilers because, you know, the Oilers were they deserved 2 points out of those four games. They were very even hockey games. And when that puck went in off Russell, it was like, here we go again.
Both games, first Arizona goal went in.
Did
off
they score
Russell.
A clean goal? The last goal, the winning goal, which we'll talk about a lot,
probably
because it involves a certain scapegoat. But they scored one clean goal in those two games. Every other goal was a tip or a deflection or a weird goal.
Yeah,
and you know, it comes down to puck luck. They're clogged in the middle of the ice and, you know, hoping for the right bounce. And they got it against the Oilers.
Bounce went in off the picket fence. They did it twice. And basically that was worth at least 2 standings points, maybe 3.
Now that you mentioned it, I really hate the Arizona Coyotes as well. And I hate Dave Tippett. So thanks for bringing that up. All right. Adam Larsson for Taylor Hall. We're going to... as I was saying, I track scoring chances, and what I noticed in the last 10 games or so, not last game, he was a bit of a, went down into the tank again, but Adam Larsson was on a really, really strong run of play. And this was what I was expecting when he came from New Jersey, Bruce. After the trade, I kept my powder dry, as we say. I didn't opine, I didn't weigh in, like, this is the worst trade ever, fire Chiarelli. I just didn't say anything for a while. And what I wanted to do was watch Adam Larson play. So I went back and I watched, I think, about six or seven games. And the player that I saw was actually pretty damn good. He was this weird anti-Taylor Hall. He was the exact opposite.
Polar opposite.
This guy with not much offense, but could he ever shut you down coming down the wing? And so when in the first 10 games of the Oilers, I wasn't really seeing that player. I was seeing a player that was making a lot of defensive mistakes, and it was usually puck coming out of Oscar Klefbom's corner, thrown into the middle, and Larson was filling to cover the guy in front of the net, which is a really hard play to make. Like, you know, you can just ask Jordan Eberle about that. Being the guy who has to cover in front of the net. But Larson was making, he wasn't doing it successfully. And I was a little bit perturbed and wondering. But in the last, his following 10 games, the guy was starting to play really superb hockey. Just constantly having his body in the right position and just a mean, nasty hombre, mm-hmm. as Donald Trump would say, to play against.
People like that, eh? I mean, your poll results certainly reflect that.
So in the days following the trade, right after the trade was made, we had an online poll, and 7,000 people voted. So for an online poll at the Cult of Hockey, that's a lot of people voting. Mm-hmm. You know, that's 7,000 voted, and 74% at the time of the trade did not like that trade, Bruce. And that's mostly Oiler fans at the Cult of Hockey. So 74% of fans did not like the trade then. And at the time, some commentators, Bruce, from around the hockey world weighed in. What did...
Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star. Let's lead off with him. And people wonder why Canadian teams don't win Stanley Cups anymore.
Then there was Eric Macromella, the TSN legal analyst, who said, now that was just a plain awful trade by the Oilers. Terrible asset management by Oilers.
James Myrtle, then of the Globe and Mail, said, it's official. It's the Oilers.
James always, he loves the Oilers, doesn't he? Yeah, he's always got a soft spot for the Oilers.
So does this next guy.
Travis Yost. Yeah, he, TSN hockey analytics writer. He's very kind to the Oilers. Travis wrote, it's official. Oilers solidify one of the worst trades I can ever remember. Certainly so in the modern era. Fireable offense.
Alan Lowtide Mitchell, Oilers blogger, radio host, my friend, said the Edmonton Oilers have dealt Taylor Hall. It is a terrible trade.
And Jonathan Willis,
our friend,
who is now with Oilers Nation and various other publications, he wrote, that's an unspeakably bad return. Then really, the really incredible thing is it appears Edmonton has traded Taylor Hall and still needs a first unit power play defenseman.
Well, that's true.
Well, that was a very good point, Jonathan.
Yeah, and some guy named Bruce McCurdy.
Yeah, Bruce, you were Reuters also on Twitter blogger. That day. What did you
I
say,
did.
Bruce?
Well, I went way out on a limb like I always do, and I said, Adam Larson better be good.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you today, Bruce.
I didn't crucify the trade without
have you,
seeing
so,
the guy play.
So the whole point of this was I was wondering, have people reevaluated the trade? Have you? So what do you think, man? You've watched him for a month now. What do you say?
I said at the time 40 games, but we're getting towards that place. And he's...
You need 40 games
for that kind of
to
player,
evaluate a player.
That kind of player? Yeah.
All right, 40 games. You'll know for sure after 40 games.
Not for sure. I never know for sure.
Okay. You will have a better understanding.
Mm-hmm,
so comes. How's your understanding now after 20 games?
Well, he's good. He's a lot of what Edmonton needed on the back end. He's very stable back there. He's had a few mistakes, a few puck handling mistakes. Yesterday, for instance, he had one where he just whiffed on a pass and then made an emergency defensive play right in the blue paint to save. It was a play that I call the old Paul Schmier, because Paul Schmier was the all-time leader of this kind of play where he'd make some kind of gaffe or blunder and then make a hero defensive play to make his gaffe disappear.
Could Paul Schmier ever hit, though?
Can Adam Larson ever hit? That was the thing I wasn't expecting. Like, I looked at his hits and I thought, two hits a game, that's pretty good. This guy's going to be more physical than what we're used to.
Did you stereotype this man, Bruce? Did you think Swedish hockey player, not tough?
No, I saw 163 hits in 82 games, and I thought, that's a good rate. But I didn't expect the mashing machine that we've been seeing. Like, he brings it pretty much every night. He's clobbering somebody.
Laying the consistent stick on people.
And he's got a number of different ways that he uses to separate people from the puck. But taking the body is high on that list, which is why I think he's doing so much better in the online poll. People love hitting defensemen.
So in the more recent online poll, which we just completed, we had 2,600 people vote. So it's not as hot a topic as it was at the time.
So we asked
people, do you think this is a good trade for the Oilers? And 85% now say yes, this was a good trade for the Oilers. So it's gone from 26% saying it's a good trade to 85%. This is saying this is a good trade for the Oilers. Wow, that surprised me. I was expecting it to be more like 50-50. There's some still on Twitter, man. There's some very vocal critics of this trade.
Oh, yeah.
Hate this trade.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
My hope for the trade always was it was going to be. I knew that it was going to be a win for New Jersey. Very mm-hmm. likely that, you know, Taylor Hall is a fantastic attacking hockey player, and we saw a confirmation of that last week. Mike Kelly, who's a sports analytics guy out of Toronto, tweeted out the real possession numbers for NHL players, where they actually time the player,
not just
make some kind of guess based on somewhat or other thing or thingamajig. They actually time the players, and he has the puck on his stick 1:42 a game.
That's a
which
lot.
Is fourth best in the NHL.
That's
for forwards,
lot.
I believe. Or maybe wow. it was overall, because mm-hmm. defensemen usually have the puck more than anybody else, because they just do. They have it in safe places. But Taylor Hall, I think he was first or second in shots from the slot in the entire NHL. So before he got hurt, he was tearing mm-hmm. up the P-patch in New Jersey.
Before he got hurt, which has always been one of the concerns with that guy.
Yeah. I was hoping the trade would be a win for both teams. Mm-hmm. I think it's a win for both teams. So I'm good with the trade. Would you make the trade today?
All last year I was reading over and over again, the Oilers desperately need to add a qualified top four defenseman, preferably a right shooting, proven NHL defenseman, maybe a young guy with upside. And if they have to overpay to do it, so be it. Well, overpay is a nice word to write until they actually change the word out, overpay, for Taylor Hall. And then as soon as it became a real transaction that many still see as an overpay, it became a lot less palatable for some people. But the fact is that high-quality defensemen are expensive.
What a ballsy trade.
It was all of that. I mean,
what a bold, like, everyone talked about bold move, and we made fun of McTavish for not making one.
And Tambellini before.
Everyone was craving for one. And,
mm-hmm. and then one happens, and Twitter explodes. Hey.
So would you make that trade today, Bruce?
Oh boy, that's such a good question.
that is a hard question.
Yeah, it is a hard question.
You got to be bold like Chiarelli, man. If
do
you're
I
make
still
that trade.
Do I still think the Oilers desperately needed a right defenseman and got one? Yes, I do. Was all the right. price right? Well, it was steep.
Alrighty. So this week, Bruce, we also asked a question. What did we ask people
okay,
this
the
week?
Okay, podcast then? Question. For the Cult of Hockey, and here's the thing, before I even get into the question, because of your poll question, I was going to say, the key question here is, when was the timing of the poll question?
Was it
after the Chicago game?
Yes.
When everybody loved everything about the Oilers?
And some people pointed that out. My old boss, Murdoch Davis, he's in Alabama now, he used to be the editor of the Journal, he pointed that out. He said, you're asking this when they're on a bit of three-game winning streak. Ask them when they're losing. And I said, okay,
yeah.
I'll wait later in the year. And we will revisit. I mean,
sure.
Obviously, we're going to revisit the Hall-Larson trade a number of times, but that's mm-hmm. a fair okay. comment. But nonetheless, 85% is 85%. Like, that's pretty. People have seen Adam Larson. They've taken his measure. They like what they're seeing. And that's the wisdom of the crowd. You might not agree with it, but that is what they are saying, the crowd.
Well, now the podcast of the question of the week is on the opposite foot. It comes after two consecutive losses to the last place Arizona Coyotes, or should we say 25 consecutive positive results for the Arizona Coyotes against Edmonton. And that is, which Oilers aren't getting the job done, and how should the coach or team respond?
All right, first up we have... member berries at Purek 27 responded. And he said, the team is pretty close to where I expect them to be. Team not built to contend for the President's Trophy yet. And this is just proof, Bruce, mm-hmm. that there are some very sane observers of the Edmonton Oilers out there. You know, that is the truth. If someone had said to 99% of Oiler fans, let's go 2 months into the season and you're a quarter way through the year and you can be one game above 500, you're going to take that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where have we been in years past? This has been like the despair moment, like the total despair moment of every year when you realize.
End of November.
When I realized, like,
there's 4 months to go and we're dead in the water.
Yeah, and it just hit home, like the old core, Taylor Hall, Eberle, Schultz, and Nugent Hopkins. They're not good enough. They're not like the cores of other teams that have lifted up these teams. They're not going to do it. And it just, the last 3 years, it just, bang, hit me in the head each year, and I hated it. So we're not there right now. This new core, Bruce, is doing it. They're
for
doing it, man.
For the most part. They're certainly, you know, the games are close.
This is what you'd expect from a team that's turning it around. They're at 500.
They're not getting thumped 4 or 5-1 every night, and they're a bounce away. And the games they don't win, they're usually in it right down to the end. But anyway, Harold Baker, he doesn't seem to have enjoyed the timing of your question, David. He says, enjoy most of what you do on the Oilers. This question on players is far below the dignity you have shown. So I guess we've shown high dignity in the past. So this is
he
a
must
good
be
thing.
Referring to you, Bruce. He addressed that to both of us. You know, the thing is, and this is what I said to Harold on Twitter, you know, we're not just pulling these things out of our butt. Like, we're watching Twitter. Yeah, we are, actually. We're watching Twitter. We're watching. I know what I was saying to myself after that game yesterday. I'm thinking, okay, who do they got to bench? What do they got to do?
Yeah.
This is what's on every fan's mind right now. This is what we're talking about. So it's not like we're trying to beat up on the team.
No.
Or we're trying to beat up on certain players. We're actually just doing what fans do. We sit there after a couple tough losses and we think, okay, what's got to change? And everyone was doing it online, so that's what we're doing now. And it's not a conspiracy of hate; it's fan talk.
Well, and we got many fans' opinions to come here.
So I actually have you reading the next one, Bruce. If I screwed this up completely, I got Brandon.
Yeah.
All right, because I don't know what's going on here. My notes are all out of order. Brandon Kalatilo. Sorry, Brandon, for that.
Brady.
Thank you, Bruce. At Kolotylo. Not impressed with Pouliot, Letestu, and Benning. Really hoping at some point the Oilers get another D-man. I like Benning. Just think it helps his game to develop in the AHL. At times he looks overwhelmed. Bruce, do you agree?
Wow.
On the Benning
overwhelmed
stuff.
Overwhelmed is not really a word I would use for him other than maybe that one play in New York Rangers at Madison Square Garden there late when he bobbled the puck and kind of panicked a bit. But I've actually been very impressed with his composure and his play sort of screams, I belong in this league. I've been quite impressed. I mean, third pairing, sheltered minutes, which is all good. That's what you want. But I have got very little critical to say about Matt Benning.
Battling Matt Benning. He is one of my favorites, man. It's unbelievable, actually, to me how well he's played. I mean, I think you picked out the one moment where he's looked flappable, but I know it's 15 games in and he's going to make some big mistakes, but hardly ever. He's just consistently making the right play. He plays a pretty quiet game unless he's belting Nate MacKinnon. But no, you know, actually, he doesn't play it very. He plays a quiet game with the puck. He's taking the body, moving the puck. But he's loud in his hitting. Like he is a gritty, greasy hockey player. He's in there battling guys. He's hitting guys. I have loved his hockey. I have loved the way this guy has played. And as a matter of fact, we're going to be talking about the power play. I wouldn't mind seeing him on the power play, because he is a right hand shot who could work well with McDavid for a one timer. Maybe he wouldn't be bad back there.
So Joseph at Joseph K 90 says it's not one player, it's the team's mindset. Can't sit a whole team. They need to show they are better than bottom teams in order to show they are for real. not just a team riding one player and a hot goalie.
Same comment. From Colin Ruttle at CRuttle5. Absolutely must get lots more out of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, $6 million a year. Jordan Eberle, $6 million a year. Benoit Pouliot, $4 million a year. And Andre Sekera, $5.5 million a year. What happened to RNH's offense?
That's a hell of a question. RNH is, he is shooting the puck more, and he's really got a shoot-first mentality. But the player the Oilers drafted was a real crafty playmaker, and I just don't know what's happened to that aspect of his game. I'm not seeing the sweet dishes and the prime chances for his wingers on any kind of a regular basis. And I know he's been given a heavy assignment in terms of he's often matched up against the other team's best forwards, but. You got to think when you get the chance on the counterattack, you're going to make more things happen than we've been seeing.
He's not. I think it's safe to say. I mean, at least at this point in his career, he's not a driver of the offense. I think at one point I kind of hoped he might be. Mm-hmm. Even as recently as this summer when they traded Hall, I was thinking maybe Nuge can step up and actually drive the offensive line. And I don't think he's that player. He needs to be with other good players to do well. Offensively, to get stuff done on the cycle, and I've liked his work a lot recently with Nugent, with Eberle and Patrick Maroon. I think that's quite an excellent line. They didn't get any scoring chances to speak of last game against Phoenix, but they got a lot of zone time. You know, they don't seem to have that ability, any one of those three guys, in a way to break through into the slot like the really great players like the Taylor Hall, like the Connor McDavid. Mm-hmm. But those three guys can work together and create some scoring chances. Nugent Hopkins is down this year. Mm-hmm. He usually gets about four and a half to five scoring chances per game. This year he's about four. Mm-hmm. So there is that's a significant drop in his production. He is getting chances though. That's not insignificant, getting four scoring chances a game. So there is a bit of bad luck at play.
Yep. Okay. Well, Limey Rebel at Limey Rebel says Eberle. Play Puljujarvi in his spot on power play. Need someone who can shoot a one-timer. Too much stick handling on unit.
The power play is broken, man.
Yeah. Obvious. He's right. That last statement is particularly true, and it's not just Eberle, though. He has the one featured right-hand shot. It really does show up that when the puck goes to his side, that's sometimes the opportunity for a quick release while everybody's moving across. And that's never been his real forte. He tried to work on it. He's had a few shots of that nature, but I'm not sure any that resulted in goals yet. And Puljujarvi, in theory, I mean, what we saw from him in the underage tournaments last year was very much a guy that was a shoot-first mentality from that left circle kind of guy that Oilers desperately need. But for whatever reason... McClellan has been very reluctant to deploy him on the power play.
I don't get it. I do not get it. I mean, it's just McDavid is getting the puck on the half wall, and what are his options? He's got to run into the thicket of the middle of the ice, yeah. Because he doesn't even seem to want to put it over to Eberle anymore, because he just realizes he's going to put it over to Eberle and Eberle's going to stick handle it. My theory on a player like Eberle is, you grow up with the puck on your stick, mm-hmm. stick handling around everybody.
Yep.
That's what you do when you get the puck, is you stick handle it. Mm-hmm. And he is an amazing stick handler. And he has this habit. Every time the puck comes to his stick, he's got to stick handle it. You know what? Even at the NHL level, I think that's a hard habit to break. So he gets the puck, and what does he do? He wants to shoot it. He wants to one-time it, but that's not in his DNA at this point. Fortunately, it is in Puljujarvi's DNA. Mm-hmm. He gets the puck on his stick. The first thing he thinks is shoot. If he gets the chance to shoot, he's going to fire it. Almost always. A few exceptions to that. But this guy is a shooter, and McDavid needs two right shot options. The last time the Oilers had a good power play, Bruce, this hasn't been broken just this year. This power play has been broken for a long time. You got to go back to 2012-13.
Ralph Kruger's team.
Yeah, they were ninth, and Rennie's team, they were third. Yeah. So Kruger, I don't know who was running the power play then.
They were both right around 20%.
Right around 20%. And since then, they've been at like 17, 18%. 15. And they had, at that time, Corey Potter on the point, who had a hell of a shot, and they had healthy Ryan Whitney the year before on the point. They haven't had, since that time, anyone who can fire the puck consistently hard on net from the point, and I include Klefbom in that list. I just don't. He may develop that, and he seems to be developing it. So it's a work in progress with him. But you know, Justin Schultz, that was the big hole in his power play game.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy for a number of years, and this power play, I just think they need Puljujarvi on the point. He played in the Champions League last year. Puljujarvi against man. Best men in Europe, he's playing the point. Wow. Put him on the point with Klefbom. Eberle down low. So then you have two right-hand shots, two options for McDavid. He can go high or low with that pass, and suddenly they got a panic.
Right.
Ray Ferraro brought up a great point, though, last week. Put him down on the goal line. Start him down there. Have him come up above the circle.
And then turn into
the middle.
With speed and the puck on the stick, yeah. Yeah, well, Ray Ferraro can run the power play tomorrow, as far as I'm concerned. But I'm not the one making those kind of decisions.
Very frustrating. All right, from Sean Pedreg at Sean Pedreg Rian, I would trade Eberle for Edmonton boy Brendan Gallagher and not think twice about it. Not sure Montreal would take that salary, though. I'm pretty sure Montreal would never make that trade.
Make the trade, yeah.
You do not trade
different players.
I'm not honestly following Gallagher this year, so I don't know what he's
doing. He had a 15-game slump without a goal, and they were probably screaming to trade him or have his head on a pike in Montreal.
Oh, I love that player.
Yeah, he's a good player. You know, he's on my very short list of serious regrets in terms of Edmonton had this BC-based scouting staff, right? Like their head scout, and they are always drafting guys out of the BCHL and stuff.
Yeah.
And Brendan Gallagher went in the fifth round to Montreal, and I just wonder how did they miss this guy? Like, I saw him play in junior, and I never saw the guy play a bad game.
Are they the same guys who took Steve Kelly over Shane Doan? Sorry for Brick.
And Aginla, yeah.
Are you going to be able to pull out of this funk?
Doan and Aginla are still in the league, I noticed. Steve Kelly hasn't been around for a little while.
He was a fast skater, though. So who's up now, man?
Okay, Rob Farmer says, at Rob Farmer YEG, Eberle is not getting it done offensively and is defensively irresponsible. Can't play a tough game. Not a playoff caliber. I'm assuming he means playoff caliber player.
All right, go back there, Bruce, to Rob Farmer.
Yep.
Okay, who's up now, Bruce?
Rob Farmer at Rob Farmer YEG says, Eberle, not getting it done offensively and is defensively irresponsible. Can't play tough game, not a payoff caliber player. And I'm assuming he meant playoff caliber player, but it's a nice little play on words there.
So there's some really angry comments about Jordan Eberle.
Yeah, there's more to come, right?
And so here's the on our podcast, here's the angriest from Dustin Banzi at Government Shutdown. He's familiar to many people on Twitter. Dustin is not a Taylor Hall fan, as some people will recall. Mm-hmm. Eberle is horse shit personified, does nothing well, and he's 5 foot nothing and plays like a squirrel.
Oh, wow. Okay. He does nothing well. That's interesting to know. You know, he came into the league in 2010, Jordan Eberle. And from that day to this, he's 23rd in the NHL in goals, like top 30 in the league. So that's like, you know, every team should have one top 30 guy, right? So to say he does nothing well, I mean, that's just flat out wrong. I'm sorry. To say that he doesn't do everything well is absolutely the truth. He's not Jari Kurri. He's not Marian Hossa. He's not 5 foot nothing. He's not a Porsche, you know. It's harsh.
Do you think they could trade Jordan Eberle right now?
Well, if they want to get lowballed, probably. I mean, sure, there's market value for scorers. Out of all the other cities, I'm hearing, We don't have enough scoring. We need supplementary scoring. We need secondary scoring. We need, and I look at Eberle and I see a long history of scoring. And yet in this town, it's like that doesn't even count. And all we seem to see these days are the defensive peccadilloes that seem to get heaped on this guy. Sure, there's value. I mean, that his contract price, I don't know how much you'd get in return, because they're certainly paying him a good dollar, but I think they just got to let him play his way out of it.
Urban Age Holmes says, let Eberle take a game in the press box. Doesn't hurt to reset and define expectations. As is, Eberle would be destroyed in a playoff setting.
Okay. Politically apathetic at Left Wing Apathy says, Eberle and Nugent Hopkins are still showing signs of the old Oilers. Need a full purge of the old Oilers who show up sometimes.
You know, I just don't buy this.
Get rid of the whole team, yeah.
The good thing now is that when Jordan Eberle makes a defensive mistake, it stands out. Before, it was just like everyone was making them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now he makes one, it's like, that's really noticeable when a player... There was about three times last game when I saw... This is a particular problem. It's really hard for forwards. When you're F1, when you're the first forward back, mm-hmm. and you have to play the role of center,
yep.
sometimes that's confusing for wingers.
Yep.
Puljujarvi lost his man in front of the net for a grade-A scoring chance last game on a deflection. Same kind of play. Leon Draisaitl was late coming back on a back check. Those two ones didn't end in goals.
Right.
This one did
right.
the wrong time. So we all remember
it. Just like
it.
The Dallas game. And of course, Drew Remenda, he seems to have eyes only for Eberle. Like Eberle was the only guy who made a mistake on that play. I mean, I'm sorry. When you have your right winger covering the front of the net on the play coming off the right wing boards, your whole team is out of position. Something has gone amiss. And it's not just one guy's mistake.
No, not necessarily, Bruce. If Eberle's deep back, he's F1, he's the center. And Nugent Hopkins has to cover that point. That's not on Nugent Hopkins. That is on Eberle to cover the slot then. He's got to read that play, make that read, and cover the slot. But Darnell Nurse,
yeah,
he does have to make the play in the corner. He's got to stop that puck from being centered like that. He's got to get his stick on the puck. He got out of position. He got deked in the corner, deked right out, and the guy was free to make an open pass to the slot. That's what's on Nurse, not the fact that he was there. I think he's got it. Someone's got to be on that guy in the corner. It can be Darnell Nurse, but everyone else has got to make the right read and cover the other player. And Eberle was just a second late making the read and covering the player.
Yeah, they all four kind of rotated into that corner was the problem. And who was reading what is an open question.
That's why goals get scored.
RNH, he rotated all the way up the boards to cover the point. Benning was in the corner behind the net. Nurse went in chasing into the same corner. Sorry, I don't like it, but I mean, I'm a peewee coach, and in peewee you teach the left defenseman to cover the front of the damn net when the puck's in the right wing corner. It's not the guy in the corner that's going to score the goal. But you're right, if he is going to chase the guy over there, then you got to make a better play. I mean, that guy beat him net side. Darnell went above the puck. And so he was one of two players beaten by the pass. Both Nurse and Eberle were beaten by the pass. And Eberle, I mean, he tried to rotate back to the net front, but he really had very little chance to cover the man, like to take the man, lift a stick, any of that kind of stuff. His what he tried to do was take the passing lane, and he did the old Sam Gagne of watching the puck. And meantime, the guy behind him stepped back a little bit. He was a left shot. Eberle sticks on the right side, which is another reason you don't want the right winger on the front of the net on a play coming out of the left wing corner. So a lot of things went wrong, and it was a beautiful pass, and Buddy made the shot. So
Eberle was puck watching.
Yeah.
And that was a mistake. It's a typical mistake that a player can make is puck watching. And how many guys are not going to puck watch and take that guy in front of the net? It's hard to do. Very few players will do it. Defensemen will do it. They're trained to do it. Eberle, he needs to work on it. So he made a mistake, and he deserves to get blamed for that mistake. On the other hand, I see him as the Oilers' most productive scoring, attacking winger. He has some defensive liabilities he's got to work on, but go from there. Johan Hedberg at Johan Hedberg 4 says... Ebs, never let him choose his own summer coach again. Pouliot, lack of confidence, and Woodcroft, power play is a joke. So we're getting onto the Pouliot comments here, Bruce.
Oh, here we go. All right, look out below, Benoit. Okay, this is from DK at DMKelly94. Well, Eberle, Pouliot, RNH have either been a non-factor or disastrous, and Jay Woodcroft.
Heather Marginette at MargieIH99 says, Benoit Pouliot has no trade value, so they are playing him to try to get him going. He's disinterested, and benching didn't work, but I would sit him again. So Pouliot, Bruce, mm-hmm. we're on to the new... There's two whipping boys right now, right? Oh, Eberle and Pouliot's the other one. And okay. Pouliot's... I'm not, you know, he's doing some good out there, but I track major contributions to grade A scoring chances.
Yeah, I know you do.
He is doing terribly there. He has made fewer offensive contributions to scoring chances than Anton Lander. Now, Benoit Pouliot is a great big guy who is... got to make plays around the net. He is not doing that this year. That's the bottom line with this guy. That's what mm-hmm. that's why, you know, people think, why are the what about his points per game in the last 2 or 3 years? Isn't he great? You might hear that from people on the internet. Yeah. Listen, the coaches are watching this player. They're recording similar stats to what we're recording, and they're seeing Benoit Pouliot. When was the last time he had a point? Was it 13 games
without a point? So he's right up there with Zach Cassian, 14 games without a point for wingers that are producing absolutely flat nothing offensively.
Zach Cassian, you worked that in there, Bruce.
I did, because nobody else seemed to mention the fact that Zach Cassian is producing 0.0 offense. And I think it's worthy of mention. You got to get something even out of your third and fourth line players. And Cassian's had a lot of time in the top nine. It's not like he's just been buried on the... the test two line all year.
I would have traded Benoit Pouliot this summer. Mm-hmm. I think he's 30 years old. He's a big rangy forward, plays a tough game. Those guys often start to break down, 30, 31, 32. Do you think they could trade him now? Do you think he is tradable with that? He's got two more years at $4 million per.
Yeah, he's right in where Mark Fain was this time last year when they waived him and nobody even touched him. He's got two-plus years to go on a pricey contract.
Do you think if they sent Pouliot to the minors, he'd be picked up on waivers by someone?
You know, I kind of doubt it. Just because of that. I mean, he's got $10 million left on his contract. And if a guy's getting cut by the Edmonton Oilers, that sends a pretty powerful message that... you know, if this guy's not making the Oilers, why would we want him on our team at that price?
And so negative trade value.
Probably salary retain or get a clunker salary back, one of the two.
I don't know. I think you might be right, though. Like, that would be my... that's why I'm asking the question. I have an inkling that you are correct about this, that he's got negative trade value.
Okay. Kerry Kettle is in the same... mindset at Kerry L. Kettle. Benoit Pouliot, a non-factor, 26 shots in 20 games.
Ow.
Five yesterday. Demote him to the AHL, call up Kara. Pouliot needs to reestablish his game/confidence.
You know what? I just think before you do that, play him with McDavid. Like, I know he hasn't earned it. I know this, but
it's got nothing to do with it.
Yeah. You've got two more years at $4 million per invested in this player. You need to get him going. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have a hard time trading him at any time from here on in, I think. So you need him to contribute. Maybe if he was producing, you could trade him. But give him he played well with McDavid last year. Milan Lucic looked slow all night last night to me. Every time they were forechecking the McDavid line in the offensive zone, it would be Lucic's turn to win the puck in the cycle, and he would be a little step slow to it. Puljujarvi and McDavid were there. For some reason, Puljujarvi got pulled off that line. I do not know why. So put Pouliot. How about Pouliot, McDavid, and Puljujarvi? Just a little bit more quickness on that line, and it might wake Benoit up. Give it a try. How about that? All right, Cervantes Xavier at Cervantes X says, Pouliot, of course. With Luch and Maroon ahead, I try to bundle him with left-hand D for a second or third right wing or a second right-handed defenseman, even someone overpaid. Am I missing something?
Nope.
There?
No, he's saying even if they trade him, even if the guy coming back is overpaid, it would still be.
Oh, even someone picking, yeah. trading for someone who's yeah. overpaid. Yeah. Yeah, I'm leery about that myself, but you might have to do that. So.
Okay. Robert Marles, or Marley's, I'm not sure which, at Robert Marles, says Pouliot has to be moved, has been consistent at under-delivering.
Eric Friesen, at Eric J. Friesen, Pouliot is the most obvious one. He's not providing any offense and still bad penalties. Trade value would be very low. Still bad penalties, Bruce?
Oh, he had those two early games, and since then I don't remember too many bad penalties. I think maybe the part of the problem is that he's more concerned about avoiding penalties than doing what he does well, which is hard on the forecheck. And penalties are the cost of doing business of the style of game that he plays. But without the penalties and without the edge, I mean, we're seeing a very ineffective player. On the other hand, in Phoenix, he did a good job of drawing a penalty, which if the power play was any damn good, you know, it could have been a valuable thing. But, you know, it's just not working for the guy right now.
Who's up?
So
now?
Aaron Katajamaki at No Than Caron. Okay. Nathan, no, I don't get it. He says, Kajula doesn't look ready. Pouliot needs to get going. Send Drake down and give Pouliot some time.
This is actually a fairly sensible suggestion, if you ask me. I mean, I think they've missed Anton Lander on the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. They haven't been quite as good on the penalty kill. They got burnt mm-hmm. for two goals against Chicago. That didn't hurt them because they had a big offensive game.
At Colorado, was it?
Or was it...
Was one
yeah,
game.
One
or
game.
Dallas, at Dallas. Yeah, that was the Dallas game. They gave him the two power play goals when Cassian was in the box twice.
Oh, that's right. That was the game. So that was the first game that Lander and Letestu were not in the lineup, I believe. Is that correct? Have I got that right at least?
It was around that time that they benched Letestu and Pouliot. And then that was the first of
Set
the three
Lander.
Wins. And then they brought Letestu and Pouliot back and they lost the next two. So
They missed Letestu on the PK when he's not in the lineup. And the same with Lander. So Kajula, I think, I've liked him okay. I think he's been fine. I think he's added to the lineup. But he's not tearing the socks off the league. He's just kind of... He's okay. Looks like he could benefit from some AHL time. And I really do think, I don't know if you have to bench Kajula, though, to play Pouliot. I mean, personally, I would be, Matt Hendricks, to me, mm-hmm. is not looking like an NHL player this year. He didn't honestly look like an NHL player to me last year. I know that people love his intangibles. He's been the lowest scoring forward in the NHL for 3 years running. He better have some intangibles because he provides nothing on the attack, hasn't for a long time. And last game, he made a terrible pass to Kajula, behind Kajula, that started off the sequence of pain, which led to the first goal against.
Where Kajula got owned by Ekman Larson in the
center ice.
Zone.
Well, that's going to happen
but
if the pass
didn't have much chance
2 feet behind you. You know, there's no reason Matt Hendricks makes that play, except he's a step behind the game right now. And I would personally not be playing Hendricks very much.
I would just say I'm seeing Kajula small. And playing small.
Yeah, he's got to stick his nose in there.
Yeah, I'm looking a little bit tentative. He had a first good couple of games, as players do when they're coming off injury and they're adrenalized. And the last three or so games, I haven't seen a whole lot. Little moments, and he's going to be a good player, I think. But Rome wasn't built in a day.
I like that signing, that's for sure. Doug F., Pouliot goes to press box, as does Letestu, because the other lineup was winning and playing harder.
Well, the other lineup was winning, no question. Like they had three wins in a row, and then they brought the two vets back, and boom, boom. So that kind of, it doesn't look good on McClellan, frankly. And, I mean, it's an easy thing for fans to point to, and you can't say they're wrong, because look at those bottom lines. Now we have Chris at Wildcard KH. Who says one word, all caps, Chiarelli.
You know what? I think we lost some... I think that's a script error, Bruce. I think we lost Chris's comment, honestly.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm just reading it.
That's a new header.
Oh, okay.
I'll have to edit that out.
Oh, sorry, Chris.
Sorry, Chris. I can't remember what his comment was. It was about Hendricks, though, because he's under the Hendricks header.
Oh, okay.
He was suggesting Hendricks sit down.
It was obviously a very good comment, because Chris makes nothing but good comments. We'll get your next 10 in, Chris, in coming weeks.
We're now moving on to the Shirelli segment. So, from Matt at Siberian Express 5, Peter Shirelli traded Taylor Hall and aren't definably better. Only difference this year is McDavid, Klefbom are healthy, and Talbot has been solid.
Okay, not better. Okay. Then we have Blaine, who says the opposite. Team is better. Players can be streaky. I'd like to see them have people who can one-time a shot on the power play. A good season so far. And that's at Mayor Blaine.
And from Elton Morrow, at Elton Morrow 1. Players he wants to see something done with. Eberle, Draisaitl, and RNH. All negatives. Coach, respond. Put them on the third line for a game or two. So Draisaitl.
Put them on the I thought they were on the third line. I thought that was the whole
Draisaitl
thing.
Draisaitl is the third
line. Either RNH or Draisaitl is on the third line, because the other one is on the second line, and they're never on the same line.
I'm actually seeing both RNH and Draisaitl. In terms of their two-way game right now, I think they're both getting the job done. The goals might not be coming at even strength for Regan Hopkins, but they're going to come soon. So, alrighty. So the fans have spoken, Bruce, and we're hearing two names again and again and again. Mm-hmm. We're not hearing Cassian.
We're not hearing Nurse.
We're not hearing Darnell Nurse. I thought we might hear a bit of that, but he has been playing very well. There's just it's long runs of good play punctuating by horrible gaffes that cause a goal against. Especially early in the game,
very late in the game, but like at New York.
I think overall people are recognizing he's getting the job done.
Well, people have more time for young players that are learning the ropes, and very little time for highly paid veterans making any mistakes whatsoever. Apparently, once you're a highly paid veteran, you're just supposed to close everything down and score a lot of goals.
Put Puljujarvi on the power play, have Eberle on the power play, put those guys together on the power play. And you have two right shot options and problem solved, Matt. You're going to get some goals. So and everyone get off their case then. How about that for
All right, Adam Larson on the power play.
Did
you see that one timer he let fly in Arizona the other night? Coming off the left point on a one time.
He's going to have to do that a lot great. More at even strength to convince me.
That was one of my favorite goals of the year, quite honestly. It was such a pretty
goal.
Play.
That was a fantastic goal. Alrighty, Bruce. Well, the clock is ticking on your car. I can see you're getting antsy there. So,
lovely Rita is waiting outside, I'm sure. Is meter maid.
Rita the meter maid. Little Beatles reference there. All right. So, in the meantime and in between time.
This has been the Cult of Hockey podcast.
Thanks for tuning in, guys and girls. Bye-bye.
I'm going to run if it's all the same with you. Yeah.